Welcome to the Eat the Evidence podcast, a show for cake and cookie decorators and sugar artists of all kinds. I'm your host, Kimberly Chapman, and this is episode number 53 on the ninth day in the millennium of April 2020. Having missed my originally intended air date of the 26th of the century of March 2020. On this episode, I talk to the one and only Cake Nexus, Kyla Myers, about the Austin Cake Show that happened way back in February of 2020, so long ago that it was closer to the time of the formation of the myths and legends in its theme than it is to now. Also on the show is Hemu Basu to talk about her fabulous entry in that show. So, whether you're baking in lockdown because somehow you've managed to find the trifecta of goodness that is butter, eggs, and flour, or you're baking in lockdown because you've been learning how to substitute for butter, eggs, and or flour, or if you're in lockdown and not baking anything because that would interfere with your staring into the void and wondering what will happen tomorrow, or if you're one of those poor essential workers still going outside to keep the remnants of society going, thank you! Let's get this show started to weirdly reflect on how things were at the beginning of March and reminisce about our sugar arts journeys. Okay, so I interviewed Hemu on March 5th and Kyla on March 9th, when the world was a very different place. COVID was in the news on March 5th, but not very relevant to the conversation I had with Hemu. But by March 9th, we were all starting to wonder if lockdowns were coming. I personally went into self-isolation on March 12th and made the rest of my family do so on March 16th. So you'll hear Kyla and I talking about the pandemic to an extent, but back then it was mostly just uncertainty. In my talk with Hemu, though, we addressed a lot of other scary issues. Because her entry at the Austin show made waves for being an amazing, provocative piece decrying violence against women. So please consider this your trigger warning that the last 20 minutes of this podcast contains discussion of misogyny and misogynistic violent crimes, as well as very strong language, because I'm not going to bleep out rightful cursing about the way women are still treated in our world. So if you usually listen with kids around, or your kids are just around because you're stuck with them in your house, as I am with mine, which is part of why this episode took so long to put together, then you might want to adjust your listening accordingly. I do want to say a very loud good job to the cake shows who have canceled, especially those who did so even before the governments required it, because we now know that they definitely saved lives in the limiting of the spread of COVID-19. We'll never know how many people are still alive because they and or their family members weren't exposed because of a cake show. But that's the whole point of the isolation. The more successful we are, the harder it will be to tell how successful we are. So bravo to the cake show directors who made that gut-wrenching decision early, because you absolutely saved lives in doing so. And since I'm facing long-term lockdown as someone on the NHS's extremely vulnerable list, it's possible I won't be able to leave my house for a very long time to come, even if the fall cake shows do go ahead. That's obviously going to impact my podcast schedule, but I'll do what I can when I can. So, let's get on with this show. Cast your minds back a zillion years ago to when we were merely on the precipice of global catastrophe. Normally for when I introduce people, like I say, if it's someone I don't know, I say, well, what do you want in your introduction? And like, cause sometimes people really want to mention that they have a school or whatever. But I have a document open where I have like the joining me now is so-and-so from such-and-such, but like it's you. So it's just like, hi, Kyla. So that's hello. That's your introduction is hi, Kyla.
Hello.
Hello, Cake Nexus.
That's me.
That's you.
Cake Nexus.
Kyla Myers, the head of all things Austin Show. How about, is that your title now? What is your title?
I think I'm just another one of the dog's body. We have a team that runs the cake show, so I'm just one of seven.
One of seven. Yeah, but I'm still going to call you El Presidente for life, because good luck getting out of that job.
Yeah, we've got a really good team now, so it's definitely been helpful. The best thing I ever did was to have two secretaries. I don't know if I ever told you about that, but
no.
Yeah. So when we did our elections last year, I thought to myself, you know, it would be great two secretaries, one for the club, one for the board meetings, right? But that way we would always have somebody at both meetings. And as it's turned out, they're both so awesome. They're both at all meetings. So it's an extra person.
Yeah, having been secretary, that would have been really nice to have been cloned, actually.
Right? Exactly. So we have Kelly Powell and we have JC Dayton. So JC is actually our club secretary and Kelly is our board secretary, but they're both pretty interchangeable. So since they're both at all meetings, then, you know, it's easy for one of them to do the club agenda or the other one, or one of them to do the board agenda. Works out wonderfully. So now I'm on to like, how can we do this for other positions so I can gain another person? Well, one thing that we did was Judy's position as volunteer coordinator. We made that a permanent position on the board.
Right.
Because before she was like our member at large. And then, you know, we were coming up for elections and we're like, what if they don't elect Judy? Oh, I got to solve for that. Let's make volunteer coordinator a permanent position. So there we go.
Kind of like how we made treasurer permanent because we were worried.
Yes.
We didn't want anyone but Irene to ever have to be treasurer.
Yes. And it's such a trusted position when you're dealing with your money that you really need somebody who's pretty stable that's doing that job.
Yeah, there's someone who's not going to quit halfway through, but also like with the massive, it's not like a little club budget.
Right.
I don't think people.
During show season, we've got, you know, $100,000 going through our hands. So that's an awful lot of money. I mean, you could definitely skip the country with that.
Well, I mean, it's not like I haven't heard about club, not just cake clubs, but like, there was one of those NPR podcasts had a whole thing about the Santas. There's like this convention of or group of people who like are Santa at Christmas, and they had a schism, and then there was like a separate Santa's group. I have to look it up, and I'll like insert a little clip as to what it is. I want to say it was This American Life.
Okay, I looked it up. It was This American Life. It was episode number 371, Scenes from a Mall, Act 3, Santa Fight Club. I will paste the link in the show notes.
It was either This American Life or one of their spinoffs like Planet Money or something like that. And this was years ago. It was when I was still living in the U.S., so it must have been 2014 or earlier. And they had this whole thing about how one of the people in the board for this Santa's group was basically embezzling or running away with the money, and how easily that can just happen in these boards where no one thinks about something as being a board position.
Right.
So, yeah, cause I think your average person doesn't understand how much money is flowing through these cake shows.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, there was that cake show, the New York one, years and years ago, not Lisa Mansour, so I will stress that, but the one that they had in New York prior to that where they mismanaged the money, that there was a whole big lawsuit, their checks to the winners bounced.
Ooh.
So it's, it was a big, big old mess. And so it was a long time before they had another New York show because of that.
Yeah, because that's going to, even if it's different people, that's going to taint it. People are going to think, oh, well, I don't want to do that because, yeah, that's bad.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Ugh. So, you know, there's a big trust issue where money is concerned. You want to make sure, absolutely sure, that whoever is dealing with your money is absolutely trustworthy. And obviously, there's nobody more trustworthy than Miss Irene.
Yes, I miss Irene. I miss Miss Irene.
She's awesome.
Yeah, she is awesome. I'd have her on the show, but I don't know that she'd even want to.
Yeah, you probably have trouble talking her into it.
Yeah, probably. So we'll just say, we love you, Irene.
We love you, Irene.
Yes. Okay, but so I've been so backed up with nonsense these last few weeks, personal stuff and this collaboration thing I just finished the other day. Literally, it was just today, because I was talking to you tonight, that I finally watched the slideshow.
Oh, right.
To see who won. I didn't know who won.
No, I mean, I don't every year, and I have to stop and look at the slideshow afterwards because I'm so busy during the show that I don't get to see the cakes.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at everybody else's pictures like, oh, I didn't see that. Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
It's sad but true.
I mean, I did see some going through social media. Your husband Chip had been sending me ones that he thought I needed to see, including Heymu's, which we'll have Heymu on later in the show talking about her piece. But
Yeah, I didn't even know Shelby had won until literally this afternoon when I looked at the slideshow.
Oh my gosh. And Shelby put together just a fabulous unboxing video all her goodies.
Yes, I didn't see the video, but I saw on one of those really busy days where I was glancing at Facebook in the morning before getting to work on this collab thing, I saw that she'd done that. I was like, that is so nice. And that was something I know that I've made an effort to do, you know, in blog posts when I used to blog about our show. I would say, make such a point of saying, I got this cool thing from this cool sponsor, because it really helps with sponsorships.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's really, really nice when somebody goes out of their way to thank our sponsors.
Yeah.
So cheers, Shelby. We really appreciated that.
I'll put a link to that in the show notes so people, and I will go watch it at some point myself. But
you're going to have to set aside a little time, because it definitely is not short, but very, very well done.
Oh, is it like a long video of her just unboxing like a bazillion things?
She's very thorough.
Okay, cool.
It's a little while, but it was very, very well done.
I mean, the prize packs have always been, I mean, having won many of them, I am literally surrounded by Austin show goodies right this minute. But it looked like the pile was bigger this year, I guess possibly because, did you get better sponsors because of Oklahoma being over?
No, I really had hoped that we would, as all shows hoped that we would reap some of the benefits of sponsorships that were no longer sponsoring Oklahoma since it's gone. But no, not really.
Oh, yeah. That's a bummer. Because it looked like a massive pile of stuff that she had.
I think it's fairly typical, though we did get that massive box of beautiful metallic cupcake liners from Cake Connection. And, of course, they're glitter dust and a few things. But, yeah, it's you know, mostly similar. I would say similar to previous years.
Okay. Maybe she's smaller than me, so she just looked more dwarfed. Because in that still of the video, she just looks dwarfed in all the stuff. And I remember people used to post their what they'd get from Oklahoma. And like the prize packs at Austin have always been amazing, but there were sometimes you'd see the Oklahoma piles of like for the people like really far down, like not even the first place winner, they would be getting like tons of stuff. And I was always like, bring that stuff to Austin.
I mean, the year before was the last OSAS, but Susan Trianos had come there with Chrissy Boone. They both won, and they had to actually rent a U-Haul to get all their stuff home with. It was that much stuff.
Where's Chrissy from? But Susan is Canadian, right?
Yes. Yeah. They're both Canadian.
So did she have to pay, like, duty taking that much stuff back over the border?
I don't know. You'll have to get Chrissy and Susan on to talk about that.
Yeah,
they were both judges at the show this year. Super, super nice people. I love both of them.
Yeah, well, I remember the cake that Susan had made for that last one, because that was the blue one with the lemons on it.
Yeah.
Because it was so gorgeous. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Honestly, I didn't even know. I'm sorry. I haven't followed the Austin show as much as I normally do, because I've had personal crises going on with my kids. And the thing was,
Chrissy was supposed to be teaching this super cute, like, octopus taking a bath kind of thing. And up to a few weeks before the show, nobody had signed up for it. I mean, like, nobody. And I didn't get it because it was super cute little class, well priced. And then I think maybe two weeks before the show, Chris was like, since nobody's in my class, how would you feel about like swapping it out for something different? She sent me this picture of a really pretty poppy design that was the poppies, and there was poppies painted onto the cake. And I was like, yeah, let's try it. And, you know, I think she ended up with maybe 12 people in that class.
Oh, that works.
You just never know. You know, we look at these classes before the show. People send in their pictures, and we pick out the classes that we think will be most successful. But, you know, it's still always a little bit of a crapshoot. You just don't know.
Well, and so much depends on the instructors bothering to share or not. I mean, I know Jessie was constantly posting her llama class because I would share it because Jessie's awesome and I would like people to sign up for her class, and everyone should sign up for Jessie's class just because she's an awesome person. And I saw when she posted the pictures, she obviously had a good number of students in that class.
Yeah, but that was another one that, I mean, we nearly canceled it because people weren't signing up for it, even though it was a massively adorable cake.
Right. And a good technique. You know,
you just don't know. But then one person signed up. I mean, she was coming anyways. I mean, she was in Dallas, so coming to Austin isn't very far, and she was planning on coming. She's like, if one person signs up, oh, great, it helps pay the gas, right? So she said, just leave it there. And so we did. So one person was signed up. And then she said to me, I think the night before, let's cap it at 4. And I said, that's fine. And that way, you know, a few people could sign up at the show. But I think it was Friday night was we were doing first go through of registration and stuff like that, set up and vendor set up, et cetera. A woman came in and by, of course, Friday night, we've taken it off the website and said you have to purchase classes at the show at this point.
Right.
So she came into the office and she said, I'd like 4 spots. And mind you, she capped it at 4. We had one person in the class, so that was quickly going to make 5 people in the class. So I'm texting Jesse. I'm like, how do you feel about a 5th person? And she's like, do it. So I signed those 4 people up. She had 5 people in her class. She was perfectly happy with that because, she's not flying in.
Yeah.
She's driving down from Dallas. So for her to have 5 people in the class is perfect. It makes her some money on the class, pays for her trip, pays for her hotel room, and she's a happy camper.
That's good. How did the other classes do? I mean, I haven't been in touch with Jackie to find out how, because Jackie was doing the showcase class, right?
No, as a matter of fact, Dawn Butler did the showcase class.
Oh, right,
class
yes. Okay,
year.
Jackie did the showcase. I'm sorry, I'm like so out of it.
And Jackie did her little Digby the Nodding Dog class.
Right,
and
the bobblehead dogs.
Well. I think she had something like 12 or 13 in her class, so it did well. Most of the classes did really well. There's always, one or two that don't do as well. And that just happens not just to us, but,
everyone,
show.
Yeah.
And we had one class that we switched instructors with, and that instructor, Sachiko, took over the class that was going to cancel and filled both her classes, that and the Harry Potter class. So she was absolutely thrilled, and that all worked out. That was a little bit of a light bulb moment for me. So the instructor was coming from Italy, and she had set her number minimum at 10, and she had 8 in the class. And I said, look, I know it's expensive to come over from there, so what if I guarantee you to pay you for the 10? Because, we'll probably get 2 more people to sign up, either now or at the show. But since the time that she had begun pricing her tickets, the ticket prices had doubled. Mm. So it was now going to cost her just shy of $1,000 to come to the U.S.,
Yeah.
So that's a huge difference. And she's like, I'm just not going to be able to do it. So I just had this thought in my head. It was like, who else could do this class? And I thought, well, Sachiko could clearly do this class. So I asked her, how would you feel about taking this class on, redesign it, do the same subject matter, but redesign it in your style. And she said, yeah, I'll take a class on with 8. And I did one of my Tom Sawyer things that I like to do. And I wrote everybody an email and said, you're very fortunate that this class is being taken on by Sachiko. Most of her classes are twice this price. But if you'd like to drop out, we're happy to refund you your money. And, of course, nobody dropped out and she filled the class. So it worked out really well. And then San Diego faced the same issue with the same instructor, and they did exactly the same thing. I sent them my email as a matter of fact and said, hey, here's some verbiage for you. And they said, that's a great idea, and it's worked out well for them also. So, sometimes you have a good idea and it works out.
Well, especially people coming from Italy now.
Yeah. And that's the other thing is that person and other people who were scheduled to teach at SoFlo or in San Diego, they can't even come now anyway.
Yeah.
So it's just as well that person dropped out when she did, because she probably wouldn't have been able to come anyways. And I think Laura Saporiti, who won the 3D cookie
That one I saw.
It was amazing.
God.
Mind-blowing. Absolutely mind-blowing. Julia Usher herself said, we couldn't stop using the word exquisite because it was just amazing.
It looked like a real plate. Oh, my God.
So Laura was scheduled to teach here, which she did, and then she was going on to Sugarland to teach at Sheila Brooks' shop. And then she's scheduled to be at San Diego and then at Miami. So it's just as well she didn't go home.
Yeah.
Because Margarita was here for our show, and she was scheduled to go teach a class in Texas like this week or next week. And she wouldn't have been able to get out. She had to cancel that because, A, the kids were kept home from school until the 15th of March upcoming. Mm-hmm. And so she needed to be home to watch her kids, you know?
Yep.
So there's that. And then I'm not even sure they're allowing them to fly out at the moment because Italy's on some very strict.
Yeah. Italy's messed it up because they foolishly said, we're going to close the north, but they hadn't closed it when they leaked it. And so just so the listeners understand, we're recording this on March 9th. We are in the middle of, we don't know what's happening with coronavirus. By the time this airs, we could all be dead. But so, yeah, Italy said, we're going to close the north, but they hadn't closed it yet. So then what I was reading today is that there's now, like, the highways all blocked of people trying to escape the north.
Yeah.
But flights can't get out.
China is exceeding them in cases and deaths now.
Yeah.
Only China. So Italy is way up there.
Yeah.
In the crisis. So, yeah, it's just as well. I'm just wondering, hopefully, things will be well enough for Laura to be able to go home after SoFlo.
Right. Exactly. This is scary stuff that, I mean, we're sending Robin to school in the morning, but she's got a minor cough, and I kind of don't want to send my kids to school because I'm immune compromised. So Karin and I just had to have this big conversation today about, well, the UK hasn't closed schools yet, but by the time this airs, they might have. And so, do we want to be ahead of the curve because I'm immune compromised and keep the kids home? Well, Peo doesn't want to stay home and miss lessons, but, you know, Robin is six.
Right.
So do we want to incur the wrath of the school? Because I really don't care if they're going to fine me for keeping her home, but would they even bother? Like, everything's up. Like, am I even going to have time to record podcasts? And then I have that scheduled this month. Are we going to miss our vacation that's supposed to be in a month from now? Who's going to be in lockdown? Is anyone going to be selling cakes? Are we all going to be dead and zombies?
I mean, I'm so relieved that our show is done, but I really feel for the other shows because, you know, we've been talking, obviously, the other cake show runners, and, you know, San Diego is obviously coming up here, you know, in just a couple of weeks. And of course, they're worried, and, you know, they were talking about do we need to cancel or what do we do? And I mean, it would have financially crippled us to cancel at that late a date. And I kind of said, look, I mean, can you even afford to be thinking about this? So, you know, we've looked at a lot of the emails that have gone out from other expos who are canceling and, you know, just looked for the best way to provide, you know, the most safety for your attendees and carry on. So, you know, Lou and Monica are adding in like hand washing stations to their show. They're making sure that they are staying on top of the announcements from the CDC and the WHO organizations to see what's being said. And they're just kind of like going ahead cautiously. And same with SoFlo and the other shows. And of course, Michelle Sweeney, who is going to be helping with the Washington State show, you know, she's been telling us what's going on up there. And she's in the Kirkland area where they've had at one place, I think it was an old folks home, a care facility, they had 27 people sick, 9 of them died. That's huge percentage.
Yeah.
And so her son's college right there had shut down. And they had been shut down for, I don't know, a week or so. And they tried to bring them back for a day. And they immediately shut them back down. And now they've gone to online classes. So it's pretty scary. And I keep seeing people posting these charts like, oh, well, the flu killed this many between this. And SARS did this. And I'm like, this is a new thing. You can't be posting numbers like, but only 8,900 people have died of this coronavirus when it's only been around for a short period of time.
Yeah.
You know, let some buildup of numbers happen. And of course, there's not everybody's being tested.
Yeah.
So there's that too. So there's a lot of, you know, people out there like, oh, you know, it's not that big a deal. People are overreacting. But we don't actually know if people are overreacting at this point yet. It's too early.
Exactly. And that's one of the things, like, I just posted that thing yesterday, that thanking all the various agencies and stuff for their efforts and all, you know, from the large to the small, from the big to the individual, because it's like best case scenario is all of their efforts save the world and we don't all die. Then people will say, oh, see, it wasn't a big deal. Same thing with the like the 99 bug, the you know, that everyone says, all these people who don't know what the hell they're talking about now going, oh, well, the 99 bug was not that big a deal because, you know, the internet didn't collapse and planes didn't fall out of the sky. And it wasn't, and it's like, yeah, it wasn't a big deal because of the legions of programmers who made sure it wasn't a big deal.
Right.
And exactly. So it's like the more effort that some of these groups put in, the less effort it appears to be. So, yeah, I mean, like I was telling you before we started recording, my husband was supposed to be in Austin this week. Mm-hmm. And I'm really glad he's not, because South by Southwest had not been canceled at the point where he was deciding maybe he shouldn't go. And of course, right. Since then, I saw your post today that it was it yesterday that it had been canceled, and that you were specifying that there was the discussion that because the mayor had canceled it, that will affect who can get refunds.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that he took that stance partially to let South by off the hook.
Right.
And secondly, to help them be able to get their insurance to pay off, you know, because that's, you know, a big deal. And some people were already in town because the South by Ed was supposed to start this coming, or this weekend.
Right.
So people were already here, but you know, that's a huge influx of people from all over the world. It's not just a local thing. South by is huge.
Yeah.
So while there's half the people out there saying, oh, this is stupid and ridiculous, you know, they're overreacting, there's the other half. It's like, yeah, this is probably just as well, because, you know, that's a lot of people from a lot of different places flying into our country, our city. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's not such a good thing right now.
I'll tell you right now, I mean, obviously I'm not coming to the Austin show purely on the, that's political.
Right.
You know that. I miss you. I miss coming. I have the FOMO every time. I'm kind of no longer having FOMO about missing the flight. I'm kind of like enjoying not taking that flight. That's a little bit dangerous. I said to Corin, I said, oh, that first year I didn't have to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to get to Heathrow to take a flight. That was
true.
I enjoyed the sleeping in part. But I like, obviously I miss coming to the show and I miss competing. I miss the whole thing. And I miss my friends and all of it. But this is different. This is not political. This is me actually feeling like if a local cake show was coming up here, I don't know that I'd be going.
Right.
And not because I'm paranoid, but because I fear the regret of, I don't want to be in a hospital bed later thinking I shouldn't have gone to that.
Yeah, exactly.
I fear my regret.
Even the CDC is out there saying avoid large gatherings. Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah. But so then we're also doing this, but what if we're the only people who show up to a Science Week event? Like, everyone's scared off. Do we get it to ourselves? Like,
right.
Like, I honestly, I cannot tell you what I'm going to do on Tuesday. Today is, well, it's Monday here now because we've talked so long that it's 12:30 a.m. But yeah. But I don't know what I'm doing in 2 days. I'm not 100% sure if I'm sending my kid to school in the morning. If she's coughing too much, I might just use that as an excuse to keep her home because I'm afraid she's not doing enough hand washing.
Yeah.
And I'm sending the older one. You know, she doesn't hand wash enough either, to be honest. I mean, I'm immune compromised. I'm always yelling at them, don't come in here with your hair down. Like, I do not like it. I don't want to see any loose hair in my kitchen, ever.
Right.
But we're four long-haired people. Corinzo's always back. And both kids come in here with their hair down. And I'm constant, like, on a regular day, I'm yelling at them, get back out there and you put a ponytail in before you unload that dishwasher. You put there's no baking allowed in this kitchen with loose hair. Nuh-uh. And now I'm in, like, overdrive of it.
Yeah.
And at what point do I say, you know, we're all just going to bunker down and not leave the house?
Right.
Like, I'm trying to not be paranoid, but I'm immune compromised. So, like, and I don't want to die.
Yeah. That's fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, jokes aside, I don't want to die.
Right.
I don't want to be burying a child and wish that I'd taken her out of school sooner.
Right.
So, like, when it comes to things like cake shows, it's like, well, I wouldn't want to miss a cake show, especially if I'd paid to go.
Right.
But at what point do you go, well, I mean, we have tickets booked for a science, most of Science Week is free. But we actually paid for, not this weekend, the weekend after, there's a thing where it's like these women doing like a circus act that's also science. And it sounds really cool and feminist STEM empowering. Okay, so we actually paid for tickets. So for us to go, I don't know, it's like £35 or something. It's not huge, but it's actual money. And we're already going, it's not worth £35 if we might die.
Right.
Like, but maybe it'll be fine in 2 weeks. Like, maybe the weather will warm up and everything will be fine.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm just glad we didn't have to make those decisions. We were early enough that we didn't have people trying to cancel their flights and cancel their classes and all that kind of stuff, because it really is, it's a really tough position to be in.
Yeah.
So I don't envy the other shows with this looming as their classes and their shows come up.
I can't imagine if you'd come and said, oh, we don't know if we should cancel or not, I would have been like,
exactly.
Because if you do cancel, then, and nothing bad happens, then people are angry with you. And if you don't cancel and something bad does happen, then people are angry. Like, it feels like a lose-lose situation.
It is. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean, California's got state of emergency. So the San Diego show is literally within a state of emergency situation.
Yeah. And they haven't started, I guess, canceling stuff up where they're at yet. And if that starts to happen, then they may have to. But let's hope not at this late stage in the game.
Yeah.
Because of course, people have bought their tickets and stuff. And then you're hoping that they've bought insurance.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, and look, even if, like with South By canceling and stuff, best case scenario is people getting partial refunds.
Yeah. I mean, I bought my ticket already for SoFlo because the awards banquet is coming up and SoFlo's there. And, you know, Jesse and I are planning on going and eating our way through Miami like we do. But I got travel insurance. So I was like, I'm not messing with this. I'm getting my travel insurance in case something happens and the show has to be canceled.
Yeah, it's scary. And I don't, again, we're recording this on, it's March 9th here now. March 8th still for you. But by the time this airs, this could be solved or the worst catastrophe since the Spanish flu.
Right. Absolutely. It's just too early to tell yet.
And how long is it going to linger? I mean, I remember talking to various people in the lead up, like on the podcast last year around September, we were all going, when's Brexit going to happen? Because it was supposed to drop on October 31st, which is the night before Cake International.
Right.
Because Cake International was the first weekend. It's always the first weekend of November. But the way that worked out last year, Friday, November 1st was the first day of Cake International. And there was like, I mean, I knew people who couldn't get a visa, who never needed a visa before. And all of a sudden were being rejected that they couldn't come. They'd bought tickets. They'd bought classes at CI and couldn't get in. And that was just a small group. And that was causing chaos for that show. Is this sickness going to last till November?
Goodness, I hope not. But, you know, it's up in the air. We don't know.
No, we don't know. I feel like I want to be able to Google. what's going to happen, Google?
You got the Google predictor.
Watching way too much Star Trek right now. It's like, Data, come fix this. Dr. Crusher. Paging Dr. Crusher, come. Can we need all hypersprays and because I don't know.
And did you hear what our theme is for next year?
Yes, I wrote you the blurb.
That's true. See, I haven't slept. I have obviously not slept. So family game night for next year. Super excited about that, and everybody seems very excited about it too. So that makes me happy.
Yes. So
it's always so hard to choose a theme. I mean. First of all, it is a good thing. Somebody already done it, you know?
When you first told me about the theme, the first thing that popped in my head was, if you've got trouble, wait, don't run, because this kind of trouble is lots of fun. And so then you said, will you write us a blurb? And I think, because I had this personal stuff going on, I kept telling you, I know I'm going to get to it, and I couldn't get that out of my head. And I thought, well, I can't just use this old jingle. And then eventually I came, and I'm like, no, I'm going to use this old jingle. And so I made up the blurb. I knew some other of the tagline. Some of these taglines for these classic games. But then I also Googled for other things and put together the blurb out of a bunch of taglines. And then I actually sat Corin down in front of me. I said, see how many of these you can guess. Of course, because being Australian, he wouldn't have heard all the same ads anyway. So he was able to pick most of them I think you could do an activity of pick out how many games are obliquely mentioned. Because obviously I'm not mentioning any of the brand names. Well, except I twisted a few of them. I come up with the last sentence right away, which was something to the effect of pursuit of cake glory is anything but trivial.
Nice.
Yeah, I like that one. So because I think the first night you'd said it, I'd gone to bed and I was in bed and that popped in my head and I had to get my phone and open that Keep app. Because even though I'm on iPhone now, I still use Android apps. And I put a note in Keep to use that sentence. But then all the rest of it was it's stringing together the various taglines. Because there's Operation and Battleship and there's a bunch of them in there.
And Irene actually came up with the Cakeopoly, which we thought was pretty fun. Yes. Let's do that.
Yeah.
It'll work.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a great idea, too, because it's one of those fun activities you can do with kids. Is make a board of edible pieces and then eat them.
Yeah.
Right.
I think the kids are going to have a good time doing it.
I mean, just in general, if someone needs a project to do with kids over Christmas or when all of our schools close and we're all going to have kids home for 3 months, you make a checkers board out of cookies and then when you take someone's checker, you eat it.
Yeah.
Right.
I haven't had a chance to debrief with Julia yet, but, she, picks her own theme, and she went with ours this year, which was really cool, and we had some great entries for the cookie competition, and I'm wondering if she'll go with our theme for next year, too. She might, because I think it'll be pretty fun for cookies.
I think it's nice to have it in that unified... I can see she does her own thing. We should tell people that, Julia, as far as I'm aware, is very happy in the... The Julia, I can't remember what the full title
Julia
is.
Julia Usher Cookie Competition. Julia M. Usher.
Julia M. Usher. Yeah,
she joined our show this year.
Yeah.
And she probably spent a good 6 months or more trying to decide where she was going to go with her competition. So, as you know, she was originally part of OSAS. And when OSAS retired, when Carrie Vincent retired, she moved up to... Show Me Sweets was an Illinois, I think, show. And then they decided to retire. So that was their last show. I was like, maybe I shouldn't let you come in and have your competition as our show. Are you like the death of all shows here, Julia? But no, she interviewed us and, of course, SoFlo in San Diego, and I don't know where else. She went with Show Me Sweets because it was a really good little show, and it was close to where she lived.
I say, she lives up there,
Yeah, she lives up that way. So that was an easy decision. But it was a much harder decision when she had to figure out, well, where is she actually going to go to? Because she's got to travel. And so she spoke with us, and she and I had actually spoke last year at SoFlo, and we kind of bonded over, wine in the evening and talking about shows in general. And so we spent a lot of time talking about what we had to offer and what we could do for them. And she chose us, which we were very happy with. And she seemed like she was very happy with our show, and the cookie competition went fairly smoothly. And I think, it was all good.
I've been in contact with her for many, many years, but we've never managed to meet. And I know that, she was on the show last year, but before that, I know when she was considering shows, I was pushing hard for Austin, obviously.
Right.
I told her about how we had been courting cookiers for years, but we're constantly running up against this thing where the catch 22 of, well, there aren't enough cookiers coming, so there aren't enough cookiers coming.
Right.
And so that we would throw out these cookie categories and then they'd be underpopulated. It'd be like me and Heather and like it would right. be like the same two or three local people who did cookies, but we were having trouble getting people because we didn't just the cookier group. They all go to CookieCon and they kind of don't want to do anything else. And so I remember talking with Julia when she was saying, well, looking for a place to put this. I was like, you should bring it to Austin because we have the numbers. And if you bring the cookiers, then it's a good marriage.
Yeah. And actually, you know, as you mentioned, we've been looking at ways to bring cookiers over for the last few years, and it began to pay off because we had over 70 entries into the cookie category last year. I think we had like 70-something actually show up.
Yeah.
So that was a really, really good number and a better number than Julia had seen at the previous show she'd been to. So she was pretty happy about that. And we had... I think we had 80-something entries this year, but we had a lot of attrition. So I think that there was some fear.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a Julia Usher competition, but she still had more competition pieces show up or an equitable number, you know, to previous years. I think there was 43, 45 that actually showed up, and they were all very good quality. So that is also a plus.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a lot. Like I said, I saw Laura's winning. I'm just going to sit here and be mind boggled again because thing looked like a real plate. I'm going to have to link to it. I need to know what she used to glaze that thing.
Oh, yeah, it's exquisite, really.
I tried to friend her on Facebook, but she's one of those people who's got over the 5,000, so you can't friend her. You like it, so I'm following her. So if you're in contact with her, can you please tell her? People desperately need to know. By people, you mean me, need to know. Like, because it's really hard to glaze a cookie because the cookie wants to eat the glaze. You can't, it's not like glazing fondant or.
Yeah.
It's not. I've tried. So, like, you can't just spray, like, a spray and shine or confectioner's glaze. I mean, you could do it on Royal to an extent. Maybe that's all she did. I don't know. It looks like a plate. It looks like ceramic fired glaze.
Yeah.
It's amazing, and I want to know what she did. But yeah, like when I was seeing people posting pictures, I saw one in particular. I said to Karen, I'll eat my hat, which I don't own a hat, but I'll eat my hat if that's not Thomas's. And it was.
Yeah. Oh, Thomas's piece was also magnificent. And the coloring on it was really beautiful.
It was such a Thomas piece.
Obviously super talented. Yeah. So when Thomas is your second place winner, you know you've had some incredible entries.
Right. And
but there was a lot of cool pieces. Jesse did a really cool piece and Mark Lee did a great piece.
The press fairy
one
thing,
of my little favorites was the Monkey King. And it was so fun. And she had included with it, there was like a big QR code sitting on the top of her paperwork. And I had to follow it because I just wanted to make sure that there weren't any pictures of her in there. Because I didn't know whose piece it was. And I followed the QR code and it just went to a page of more pictures. And I was like, this is smart. This is really smart. They brought a book of pictures. But on the other hand, they've included an easy to use little QR code that takes you to even more pictures. And so there was that. But they also included like a dental tool for looking inside to encourage you to go under the pagoda and look inside, and a flashlight. Oh, this person was incredibly prepared, and it turned out that it was our old friend Sylvia Wilson, who always does exquisite work.
Yeah,
She's moved into doing cookies now, and I'm always happy when I see that Sylvia is signed up to be at the show because she does great work and she's just such a nice person.
Yeah.
So I saw her and her partner there and we had a chat, and she was like, I'm just so, you know, impressed with how far you guys have come with judging and other stuff like that. And it's always nice when you hear that kind of praise from, you know, people that you respect in the industry and are happy to see at your show.
Yeah. I'm still in awe of how many years ago was it that she did that buttercream wolf?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that? Like, when I think of Sylvia Wilson, or when I think of ridiculously advanced buttercream, I remember the wolf. That was still at the North Austin Event Center, so that was a long time ago. But that buttercream wolf that looked like it was, that was not, did not look like buttercream.
Well, she took Best of Show the first year she entered our show with that little dragon that she did. Do you remember that? It was when we were at the North Star something event center in South Austin that had the two sides to it.
That predates me. Place? I wasn't there then.
Okay. So
I started in 2009.
That was a long time ago. So it was pre your ever even being at our show. It was a cool little facility, but we would have outgrown it by now. But she brought this little dragon, and it was a little gold dragon. And what was so cool about it was it had kind of a warrior princess, little teeny tiny perfect warrior princess standing on our on the dragon's head with the sword out, and this teeny tiny little treasure chest with all the little teeny tiny gems in it. And we were all so blown away, and there was a little bit like, oh my god, this person can't possibly be a beginner. But Sylvia had been in some kind of an accident, but I can't remember exactly. She was laid up for long, long time recovering, and she took up cake decorating. So she was just had nothing to do with her time except learn cake decorating. And so she was truly a beginner, and she took Best of Show. Yeah. And that happens sometimes. And she's just continued to hone her craft, and now has moved into cookies. And I think that she will just become even better and better at that. And now she talked to me about possibly becoming a judge. So she's looking at going to ICJ with Isis in Reno and maybe moving in that direction. So somebody who's as well-rounded as she is, having done cakes, sculpted cakes, and now cookies, is definitely a great candidate for judging.
Yeah, and she's nice and everyone likes her, so that always
and
helps.
And she's nice, yeah. She's an absolute sweetheart.
I remember her talking at one of the, when it was still a day of sharing in San Antonio, and she was doing a demo up there, and because I was sitting there, and she looked right at me, and I didn't even think she knew who I was, and that was the year that I made that Singing in the Rain piece.
Oh, right.
And because she just finished talking about how she got into it because she'd been ill and sort of got into it. And then she was talking, and then she looked right at me, and she goes, "I know what you did." And I'm like, "I don't even know you know who I am, and how do you know what I did?" And I said to her later, "I didn't think you know." And she goes, "Of course I know who you are." And I'm like, no, we have a problem here, because I'm the one worshiping you. This is, no. This is freaking me out. But yeah, because that wolf. But I'm going to have to go find, I don't know, that's so long ago. I'm gonna have, maybe I'll have to suck up to her and say, can we have a picture of your buttercream
right.
wolf?
Because she's done that firefighter one year, which was also a spectacular piece.
Yeah,
yeah. She's had a lot of great pieces. We've been really fortunate to have some just beautiful entries at our show. One this year that I absolutely loved, there was actually two kind of along this line, but in the show pieces, there was a Cerebus there, and it was really nicely done. I mean, the lava at the base of it looked like real lava. I mean, it was incredibly well done. But on a side note on that one, it was done by a lady named Karen, is it Richardson? Now I'm forgetting her last name, and I should look that up. And there was a point during the show that somebody in, I think it was actually somebody that had been in Jesse's class, had come up and asked one of the volunteers, like, "Can you tell me who did this cake?" Because they work for AMD, and they had a new product, or they've got a new product rolling out, which they're calling Cerebus, right? And they were like, "I need that cake for rolling out of this. I need it, right?" And we're like, "Well, I can't give you her name, but I could give, you know, your card to her." And they were like, "Yeah, that'll be fine." So I went to find her, and it was the funniest, little cutest conversation ever, because she was like, first of all, she was just like so excited that anybody would want her cake. But secondly, she was like, "I don't know who AMD is." And her friend that was stood next to her, and I think our jaws dropped. We're like, "They're big. They're really big."
Yes. Yeah.
So she was super excited. She's like, I'll get in touch with him, I promised."
Yeah, that's like a corporate business forever there. That's
Reynolds, Karen Reynolds. And yeah, so it was just a fabulous piece. On the other end of the cerebus spectrum was this, I don't know if you saw this picture, but there was this three-headed cat, and it was like Cerepurus or something like that. It was like the cutest thing ever.
I don't think I saw that, no. Like I said, I went
through
the slideshow.
They might even be in the slideshow, because I think they might have won something, but it was just adorable in the divisionals.
Okay, guys, whatever you're working on, it's time to take a stretch. Put your piping bag down, put those tweezers down, put whatever you're working with down. Stretch your hands, stretch your arms, do a big stretch back. You're going to feel so much better after you do this, trust me, guys. Okay, big stretch. Oh. Give your shoulders a bit of a shake. Right? Doesn't that feel better? Okay, now you can get back to being awesome.
We had 25 registered for show pieces, and I think around 20 or so showed up. I
mean,
Chip could tell you better than me because he's the king of the numbers, but we had a really good showing for show pieces, and we had some just spectacular piece. I don't know if you remember this, but we talked a little bit about I had wanted Brian, before he moved away, to do a piece because I wanted someone to do Icarus Falling. And I knew I would not have time to do that, right? So we're there at the show, and I see Cassandra Fairbanks walk in with like four men carrying her piece, and lo and behold, it was Icarus Falling. I cannot tell you how thrilled I was to see that place, and it was beautiful.
It is.
And I don't know if you were reading her prior to the show, but she had an unfortunate accident.
Yes.
And I think her piece just like fell a piece, like a week and a half or less before the show. And
I saw that post. Yeah.
Yes. She wasn't going to finish, but she like worked around the clock.
So wait, that was the piece that broke?
Yes.
I assumed it must have been something else.
New piece. I don't know. She started over and she got that thing done and at the show.
Wow.
And it was so incredible. Like there was a plate of glass that was water that Icarus was falling into.
Yeah.
And through the water was like the leather bracelet from his wrist. It went from the top and went through the water, the isomalt water. And there was something else like that too, that was sort of half in and half out of the water. It was an absolutely incredibly beautiful piece. And it was just like shy of taking first place. I mean, I think there was a minimal point difference between first place and it because it was just so beautifully done.
That's amazing. Because my heart broke when I read
that
post.
Shelby Bauer took first place with her incredible piece. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just so much that to look at. You know, I didn't envy the judges having to make that decision.
Yeah. Is Shelby's piece bigger than it looked, though? Because I did look at that. It looks like it's, if it's figure size, I'm like, that can't be 100 servings. So it must have been much bigger.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the photos make it look like it's, you know, like a foot tall, but it must be much bigger.
Yeah. And I think that the requirement is 2 feet tall for show pieces. Anyway.
Yeah, it is.
So definitely bigger than it looked.
Yeah.
We have some just spectacular pieces.
Yeah.
And I'm still, you know, looking at photos, other people's photos, and saying, oh my goodness, look at that piece or look at that piece.
Well, the I'm blanking on her name, but I know she goes by the Frostitute. And she's going to come on the podcast in the fall. We're working out the details because she made that cookie Medusa head using the technique where you put all the gingerbread together and then you carve the whole thing as a block, which I've been meaning to do that technique.
And it really looked like wood grain.
Yeah. Cause so it's a really cool technique. And I, like I said, I've been meaning to do that technique for a while because I mean, I've seen that done in other media. So that's like, well, God, since before I left Austin, I've been sort of meaning to play with that. But I've seen some people do, someone just did something like that in Royal Icing. Prachi. Prachi just did a royal icing thing. The layers, and you just build up all the layers, and it makes the 3D object. But hers were just flooded out royal icing things that stack together, and I'm like, oh, hot damn, that's amazing. But yeah, so yep. That piece was amazing too. The Medusa head, that was really cool.
Crazy good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I need to ask you about
great pieces.
Innovator, because I did notice there was, tell me what the Innovator was, because I saw that in the slideshow, this was the Innovator piece, but what, why? What was
you
it?
You would ask me, and you really should be asking Mitchie or Chris Aranda, because okay. Now I don't remember, but it was something kind of like a fruit leather, but not. It was done in an innovative way, whatever okay. It was. And I think the interesting thing was that what they had thought was innovative on their piece was not what their piece was selected for. So when, you know, Mitchie, the great thing about Mitchie and Chris is that they've seen it all. Mm. So if, you know, someone thinks this is a new technique, which, you know, is legitimate, they might think they're the first one to do that. But, you know, cake decorating has been around for a very long time. So it's somebody like Mitchie's like, no, this isn't actually new. But tell me what you did here, because that looks like something new to me that I've never seen before.
Yep.
So out of this conversation came this other technique, and they were like, okay, now that's innovative.
Okay.
And that, I think, is what won on that particular cake. But yeah, definitely talk to Mitchie next time you have her on, and she can tell you a little bit more about that.
Because that's obviously the one I'm obsessed with, because when I die of coronavirus in the next few weeks, you know, you're still under obligation to name that award after me. That has to be the Kimberly Chapman Memorial Innovator.
This is going to be Kim's Coronavirus Award.
Yeah, that's right. Kim's dead, so we have to name the award that Nick pushed through to make Kim feel better about the damn gummy stuff. I have a soft spot for that award, and yeah, yes, when absolutely. I die, you have to name it after me. And I would just really like that to not happen this year, because I have too much to do.
Here's a laugh for you, though, because we thought this was going to be the year of the unicorn, right? But we were so wrong.
Because of the dragons from the fantasy year, you thought this year would be all unicorns.
Yes, but it was actually the year of Medusa.
Yes, I noticed that. There were a lot of Medusas.
Medusa cakes. there was like
a tower of Medusa cupcakes somewhere in the awards show.
Yes, it won the small bite.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or was one placed anyways.
Do you know what? But I think there's a lot of angry women out there who more and more are seeing that Medusa seems like a good, yeah, maybe we should have more Medusas and more Perseuses who are punished.
Maybe.
We're just angry.
And of course, you know, that leads back to Hamu's piece, which was just right. Fantastic. And I saw her setting it up, and she had put in for the Edible Paper Awards that Icing Images very nicely sponsored. Mm-hmm. And she had all of these pieces around there. And I was like, that's just a magnificent piece. And she began to tell me the story of the piece. And she's like, can I explain this to the judges? And I said, unfortunately, no, but this is important. So I feel like you need to go back to your room, because this was Friday night, which is our first opportunity to set up the cakes. And I said, please, please, please go back to your room, write this all out, and put it with your cake.
Yeah,
and
you can do that.
She did that. And she put it with her cake, and the story, I mean, really stood on it on its own. It's a powerful piece, and I was so glad to see that the FIPGC picked her in their top three winners for the show. So even though she didn't place in the show pieces because of just the crazy number of fantastic pieces, she did get recognized at the show for having such an incredible piece. Absolutely
yeah.
Incredible. And I was also really happy because, you know, throughout the show, people kept saying to me, does it have to be Greek or Roman mythology? And I said, no, it can
no.
be any mythology from any country, from any religion. It can be any mythology.
Again, when you had me write the blurb for that last year, I was really particular yes. about that. I was,
yeah.
I struggled
but, you know, I
with that to make
the,
sure. Yeah, because
part of the show art, you know, maybe kind of lent itself to that, but it wasn't
yeah.
all
no,
Greek
no.
and Roman, but you know, people kind of get that. And so, and people don't read.
Well, that's it. Because I made a specific effort because it's me. So, of course, I made a specific effort. I can't remember the exact wording that we used, but I know I was deliberately including non-white, non-European references. Because you got to be careful when you write these blurbs. You don't want to use, like, again, with the Cakeopoly, I didn't want to name all the games, because if you name them, then people feel like, well, now I can't do that.
Yeah.
Right?
Or that's true.
Right. So it's really a tricky business to do these blurbs where you're saying what we want, but not specifically what we want.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a fun challenge you give me every year to word that.
And so we had Hemo's piece, and we also had Shiva right next to it, which was pretty awesome. And yeah. It was right before one of the big holidays that actually had to do with Shiva. So the timing on that one was also really cool. But there was a lot of really great pieces, and not just Roman or Greek mythology. So I was really pleased about that.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, and like I said, we'll have... After I wrap up with you, people should keep listening, because we'll have Hemu on to talk about her piece, and I'm going to have to put a warning in there. I'll mention it now. It's a violent piece, and we talk about the violence and the anger, the righteous anger of women about that. And there may be some stark language, we'll say. But I can hear Chip cooking your dinner in the background.
Yes, can you hear that?
Yes.
Chip is loud. I mean, like, he slams the microwave. He's like messing around getting the silverware. I'm like, this is going to be really great on the podcast. Jingle, jingle, jingle.
Yeah. Whatever. It's just so
That's
late.
That's okay. It's just Kayla's husband being obnoxiously loud in the background.
But it's also, Chip was the one who throughout the show kept sending me messages about various pieces that he needed to see, and particularly Hemu's piece. He kept saying, I'm going to find out who did this. And with the write-up, it's funny that you say that she didn't know she could put it in the write-up. First of all, because we put it in the rules that you can. I know that because I wrote that. Because if there's anyone who's ever written an essay for judges to read, it's me!
Exactly. Exactly. And, of course, you do for us, well, obviously, a lot. The press releases and the judges... Quick, what do we call the judging sheets? The little
judging advice
too long,
sheets.
Didn't yeah. read. Those just quick yeah. cheat sheets for them to refer to, because we go through all of this stuff before the meeting. But it's a great easy thing for them to kind of have a go through.
Yeah,
we talk about, you know, my favorite every year, my little pet peeve is, please don't select a winner for special techniques not on the cake if it's on a cake. Because it's happened more than once.
I know.
A winner in that category, and I look at the slides and I'm like, wait a minute. It's on a cake. I'm like, please do not let me be embarrassed by having that on a cake. Stop it.
Or where it was... Okay, honestly, really brutally honestly, one of the reasons I wanted to do those judging advice sheets was because how often I was so pissed off as a competitor because some judge would write... Because that was my category, was special techniques not on a cake, especially once I started traveling from all the way out here. Someone would always write, would have liked to have seen this on a cake. And I'm like, it is literally in the name of the category, not on a cake. Why is a judge telling me it should be on a cake? And it happened to me like 3 years in a row. So that's why yeah. it now says, do not, it actually is explicitly written instructions for the judges now. Do not tell competitors it should be on a cake. That is my personal bitterness.
So that's my little... In my blurb at the beginning of judges training every year, please do not select a winner for this category that's on a cake.
Well, and without naming names, there have been a couple times I know that I've said, Kyla, we need to move this cake because someone has put a special technique's not on a cake that's on a cake. Let's move it to another category.
Yeah. And we did that. Last year? Year before last, I think.
It was the last year that I was there, and I know exactly what it is.
I think you had told me something about it the night before, and I still hadn't caught it. And then I heard this murmuring going on. Okay, wait a minute. Show me what is going on here. So they took me over these two pieces. I looked at it. I went back to the judge, and I was like, okay, you cannot award this particular piece first place in this category because it is in special techniques on the cake. And not on a cake, and it is clearly on a cake.
Right. So,
well, as it happened, it was on a single tier cake. There was not a first place winner in single tier cakes. So they moved that over and it was all fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just goes to show, I mean, for our own protection as well, we need to make sure that, you know, the whatever wins in that category is actually representative of that category, because people will get upset, rightfully so.
Yeah, no, I remember
monitor that.
I remember coming up to you and saying, we need to fix this before, because it was before the show had opened. Yeah. I said, if we don't
you said
fix
it, actually said it to me the night before.
Yeah, I said
you had heard rumblings about it.
Right.
And I didn't think too much about it. I'd kind of forgotten about it until I heard a couple of our regulars chatting about it on the side. I kind of breezed yeah. past him and I caught a couple of words and then I thought, oh, this must be what Kim was talking about. Let me go figure out what's going on here.
Yeah, because I could see I wasn't going to be butthurt because that was the category I didn't care. That's where I had my little tiny ladies. That was my joke piece. Do you remember when we used to joke about getting arrested by the U.S. government in the early Trump years? And that was funny and a joke and not actually a terrifying prospect. But my real entry that year was the sewing machine and the cookies, which was by itself.
Right.
Because back then I could be alone in cookies.
Which was
because Sarah was still in advance.
That cookie sat in my own house
yep.
for a day or so. And it wasn't even until like the show that I realized that it was cookies.
The sewing machine.
And I was like, what? Oh my God.
Yeah, well, that was when I still had a hope in hell of winning anything cookie because Sarah was still in a lower category.
Yeah, and this year she judged, and I don't think she even entered the show. I think she might have done a tasting entry.
Yeah, now I think about it, I hadn't seen her name around. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, you know, you can still enter cookie because you're not judging cookie.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I remember saying to you on the Friday, if something isn't done about this piece, someone's going to get super butthurt, and rightly so, and you right. don't want to deal with that on Sunday with the awards.
No,
and I remember because it was when we were going back to your house that I was saying, ugh. Yeah, because
yeah, you were spot on there. So, yeah.
Well, you hang around this long enough and you start to realize what people are going to freak out about.
Yeah, that is true.
And who is going to freak out?
Yeah.
And why?
And sometimes we've come a long way in some things, like, you know, in the old days we used to have a slide be wrong here and there, and it can still happen, but the way that we're doing that now is that, you know, we obviously have our database and stuff and of all of the competitors who's entered, and part of Chip's job is to go in there once the judges have passed over the sheets of who the winners are. He goes and enters them into the database, and that's really good because, you know, Chip is don't tell him I said this, OCD. And
I'm not allowed to make that joke anymore.
Right. He'll get the numbers in and he'll say, okay, you've clearly written down the wrong number for this one because this is adult beginner and that person is a teen.
Yeah.
So that's the first check. It's got to get past Chip and
yeah.
he's going to be like, okay, this person is correctly in this category, you know, first place adult beginner, and this person is indeed adult beginner. And they did indeed bring a piece for that category, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then once we've got those in, then Chip exports all of their names and their numbers and stuff down to a CSV file, which goes over to the folks who are putting together the slideshow. And then they import those into the slides. It's pretty slick. And then they import the pictures. So they get them all lined up together, the pictures with the correct numbers, the users from the database, and they all go into the slides in a pretty slick little process. So we haven't had any major malfunctions, knock on wood, on the slideshow in a couple of years, thanks to that.
And you know what? Is anyone else even doing photos? Because last I checked, we were the only ones who were.
Oh, I don't even know.
I don't, like, it's possible. I mean, obviously, it's been several years since I checked into it, but, okay, so the last show I came to was, what, 2018? And I think at the time, we were still the only ones during the award show putting up a photo, because it is so, people don't think
it's
that.
Hard.
It's a logistical nightmare, actually.
It is, absolutely.
And you could probably sell software or something so that nobody has any money.
We basically photograph every take in the show. The only one we didn't put photos in of, and we try is the tasting. And the problem is, and it's really hard to get good photos of the tasting. No matter how fabulous the piece is, it's hard to get a good photo. We don't want to put up a photo on the slideshow that is not complimentary to the, you know.
Yeah, you don't want something that's been stabbed with spoons for tasting, because that looks weird and gross. Right.
And plus, it starts early. So we've got to get somebody in there to photograph all the tasting entries before the judges start eating it, you know.
Because it's got to be within the first 4 hours because of... You know, food safety.
What I need to do is get Jessie in there, because I don't know if you've seen Jessie's food photos, but she's really good at that. I'm going to be like, hey, Jessie, do you think you could go back there and photograph these food entries and so we get some good pictures?
But even then, it's tricky because, like, anything that's like chocolate is so hard to photograph because black and dark. And
it's tough. It really is. And, you know, tasting is not judged on appearance.
Right.
It's judged on taste. So, you know, it may not be a beautiful entry.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it may taste divine. So, you know, there's a little bit of that going on with the tasting entry. So I think I heard somebody complain suggest that we add pictures, and we're like, yeah, we're going to try and do that. You know, but usually we do get the pictures, and then we look at the pictures and we're like,
Well, and also with tasting, like, I mean, just thinking from a blogging perspective, often when I'm blogging a recipe or something, you want the outside but also the inside.
Yeah.
So are you going to wait for a slice to be taken? But again, it's not like people sometimes have a wrong idea of how some of these tastings work. They think that everyone's getting like a beautiful slice of cake. No. Sometimes like it's the judges are going around with a spoon.
Right.
They're taking just like a chunk out. And going, nom, 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 okay, and they're writing down their thoughts because they have to taste 10,000 things. I don't know how they all don't die of diabetes. I swear I don't.
No. Oh, I know, because, you know, I am diabetic, and I did it 1 year.
Me too.
The worst possible year ever, because it was the cola cakes year.
Oh, God,
and I got about halfway through, and I was, like, sweating and starting to feel nauseated. It was like, guys, I can't eat any more of this cake. I just can't do it. I'm getting ill.
Yeah. Well, it's part of why I don't enter tasting anymore, because I like my cakes so non-sweet and dark and rich. The darker, the richer, the better. But I find the judges, and not just in Austin, anywhere. Well, God, really, especially here in Britain, they want fluffy sweet. That's what they like. They like fluffy sweet. And I'm like, ew, gross. I'm not making fluffy sweet. Why would I want to make fluffy sweet? I don't want to eat fluffy sweet.
I mean, American tastes are different.
Yeah, yeah. But, when I first moved here, I thought that Americans were bad with sweets, and then I met the British. Oh, my God. And now I frequently said, look.
Well, you can see where that sweet tooth came from directly.
Yes. I often say, you know, this country, England conquered more geography of this planet than any others, partly to get tea and partly to get sugar, and by God. God, they're going to use that tea and that sugar.
Partly just to get decent food.
Right?
Okay, whatever you're doing right now, whether it's actually working on a project, or if you're washing up, or you're stuck in traffic, whatever you've got going on, take a deep breath. Everything's going to be okay, because you're awesome.
It's still an ongoing joke that anytime I want to wind Kyla up, I'll just say, Tex-Mex in England.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Yep.
Or
triangular scones. That gets me every time. I'm like, would you Americans please stop making triangular scones? It's not right.
Well, it's because they're doing the thing where they make the big round one and they're cutting it into wedges. But then the wedge point is always too dry.
Yes, and that's the whole thing about triangular scones to begin with, is that you've got 3 points of dryness where
that's
it
right.
dips down.
Yeah.
No, yeah. They make them round.
I'm constantly confusing people here because I still call cookies cookies. And when I say biscuits, I mean a U.S. Southern biscuit. When I make biscuits here, what I'm talking about is actually the King Arthur Flour Never Fail Biscuit recipe, which is using up well, for Americans, it'd be heavy cream. If you've got, okay, I'm going to just put this out there for listeners. If you've got too much heavy cream, or here in England, double cream, which is better because it's more fat. It's so good. Okay, so you take equal weight of whatever, however much the cream you have. So if you have, like, you've used some for a recipe for making your ganache or whatever, and then, like, you have, like, 108 grams left, then you measure out self-raising flour. If you're doing it in the U.S., it's already got salt in it. Self-raising flour in the U.S. has salt. Self-raising flour in the U.K. does not.
Right.
So you need to know that. But so here I'd add some salt in the U.S. if you don't need to. But you do equal weight of both, and you just mix that, and you just make little balls of it and throw it in the oven. I think it's a high temperature. See, I have to convert it here. I think it's 475 Fahrenheit, but I actually do it a little bit less when I convert it to Celsius. And yeah, I think it's like 235, but I do it at like 230, something like that, and for 15 minutes. Okay, so that's your base thing, is it's just the heavy cream or double cream, whichever, and the flour and some salt. That's the base. Now, you can make it sweet. You can put in honey or sugar or chocolate chips or whatever you like. Or you can put in cheese or sausage or cheese and sausage and cheese and sausage and chives. Oh, my God. So this is what I do with when I have leftover double cream. Because, you know, like when I'm going to make a cake with – I'm almost never do buttercream anymore. I always ganache. And so I buy 600 milliliters of double cream, and I usually use 300 to 500, depending on how the – you know, like, especially with a carved cake, you don't know exactly how much you're going to need. Mm-hmm. So I end up with these weird amounts of double cream. And I think if I drank tea, I'd be putting – do you put that in tea? I don't know. Maybe? Yes?
Maybe.
I don't know. Whatever. I don't drink these hot beverages, so I don't make – but so I always have these weird amounts of cream. And so then I make this – oh, and I like to put honey and blueberries. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a nice – you can pretend that's, like, healthy because it's got blueberries in it. And so this is, like – so I'm constantly using up the double cream this way. And if people out there Google a recipe called King Arthur Flours, which – were they a sponsor this year?
Yes.
Okay, good. Look at us doing a shout-out for a sponsor. King Arthur Flours never failed biscuits. But it's, yes, biscuits means U.S. biscuits, not cookies. Not
right.
Because I live in a very confused place.
Yeah, they sponsored our tasting again, which we're really happy with. And, of course, they sent flour for our tasting entrance as well, which is great. Pallets of flour from King Arthur, never a bad thing.
Nope. I mean, I have several King Arthur products around, and you're like, from when they've done, you know, scrapers and stuff, and it's all from the Austin show.
Yeah,
because it's not a brand
really
here.
Great but... sponsor for us. And I don't know if you remember, but years ago when we did Cake a Lot, which was the Renaissance theme year, I thought to myself, King Arthur would be a fabulous sponsor for this because, you know, they've got a Renaissance type label. And so I had contacted them and they were interested and they got back with us and they've been a sponsor ever since, even though we don't, you know, every year obviously have Renaissance. And every so often, this year was one of them, they bring their van, their big mobile home, whatever they call it, and make fresh homemade cookies. So you can step outside into the cool air, get a warm, freshly baked cookie from the King Arthur truck, which is fabulous, and then come back in and eat it. And as a matter of fact, I think they had milk as well. So you could get milk and cookies outside at the King Arthur truck.
I remember you telling me that was coming in the first year I couldn't come, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, I'm always excited when they're bringing the truck. You know, they can't do it every year, but when they do, it's like a special little treat.
Mm. Do you know what? I had a dream the other night that I was trying to get donuts. And do you know what I realized, how sad this is? The last donut I had was a Round Rock donut at the Austin Cake Show. I have not had a donut in however many years.
That's a tradition, and I started a new one last year kind of unwittingly. So, of course, we had Round Rock donuts, and thankful for Gwen and Christine, who are always the ones that go and get them and bring them to the show for me. But last year, on the way to the show, I just had this idea that, you know, I knew that Rudy's, which is right across the street, Rudy's Barbecue, does breakfast tacos. So I thought, I could order some breakfast tacos and bring them in. So this year I did the same thing. And then that was Saturday. And then everybody was like, are you bringing more tacos for tomorrow morning? I was like, well, I hadn't actually, I paid for those out of my own pocket. You know, it's not cheap. And they were like, oh, bring them. We'll take it out of the cake show budget. And I was like, okay. So they've got this new thing over there that you can do this like barbecuego.com for Rudy's, and you can just order right there and you can pick them up at the crack of dawn. Literally, I picked them up at like 6 the first day and 6:30 the second, something like that. And they've got a little, thing outside with a phone on a wall and a little like ice chest that contains water. And you pick up the phone, it directly dials into the kitchen, and you tell them your name and you're there for a pickup. And you can order online without paying, and they'll come out there with their little credit card reader and your bag of goodies. They'll process your payment and you're on your way.
That's really
cool.
They're
efficient. They're so efficient. So yeah, it's the new thing. Now we have Round Rock Donuts and Rudy's breakfast tacos first thing in the morning. So if you're not coming in early in the morning, that's a you snooze, you lose.
Yeah, I don't think people realize you volunteer at the Austin show. There's food, man.
Yeah, there's food.
No, but seriously, yeah. I woke up from this dream and thought, when was the last time I had a donut? And I actually realized that was the last time I had a donut.
And that was actually a category in our tasting this year was donuts.
Was it?
Yep.
Actually, mm-hmm. No, I did know that because from reading the rules. But see, because I read the rules, we did go over the rules months ago, so, and my head is, like I said, been in this other weird space for a while. I feel like... In other years, I was at least following along with the show, and I know there was even talk that maybe I would help do social media, but Mitchie's been so on top of it that
I wasn't
needed to do it. But it was a good thing because the actual weekend of the show, do you know what? It was like halfway through Saturday before I realized, oh, Austin show is like now. because of the personal stuff going on with our daughter, yes, with the school. Ah, it's just, I'm not even going to get into it on the podcast, but it's just... It shouldn't be a crisis. We're going to fix it. It'll be fine. Everyone's fine. No one's hurt. It's a government logistical nightmare we're stuck in the middle of. And I really did not need it to hit 2 weeks ago, and it did. And just everything's gone to hell since. But
yeah.
Oh, so that's why, like, normally I'm...
We had baklava, which was also really good. And Jesse made a really good baklava that went with that.
Did Chip make his macarons?
No, if you didn't, that wasn't one of the categories, but I shouldn't make that for one of them because
I meant for volunteers.
One of my very favorite things.
Doesn't he usually make the macarons for volunteers? I meant.
Oh, no, he used to do them for Dave Sharing.
Oh, is that what it was?
But he just hasn't really had the time in the last couple of years to do them. But all the girls are always like, is Chip doing the macarons? Is Chip doing the macarons? Like, he's like, woman, what have you got me into?
Well, for a while there, like, do you remember a couple of years ago, it really started flaring up with the decorative macarons? Like every the more elaborate ones I'd see, I'd poke Chip and be like, better up your game there, bucko.
One of our folks that was a competitor, she needed some help with her registration, and I had called her, and she said something about she was doing macarons for, it may have been for tasting for something in there. And I was like, well, you can definitely feel free to drop some of those by the office for me. And she actually did. Jennifer Hill brought me over some salted caramel macarons, and they were so good. Oh, you know, Judy, so in the past years, Judy, our volunteer coordinator, has always been like, bring me gummy bears, you know, whenever they're like trying to bribe her. So just after Christmas at some point, Irene and I were doing some shopping, and we found this like giant gummy bear on Christmas clearance. I was like, I've got to get that for Judy. So we sucked that away until the show and presented that to her. So that was pretty funny. But this year she was like, I want almond Snickers. So we were all Snickers all the time this year.
Did someone bring you Snickers?
Every kind of Snickers. We had it.
Because that's the long-standing thing, is when Kyla's getting testy, someone give her a Snickers.
Exactly. That's the hint.
Yeah.
Kyla's being testy, give her a Snickers. Then she'll get a clue.
That's why I have a stock picture of, like, a basket of Snickers for just any time on social media. If you're grumpy, I'm just like, here you go. And then if you're having a real bad day, I have the picture of that Maltesers truck.
Yes.
That I'll bring out for you and Lorraine as the Maltesers trucks. And I've now got a thing where when Dawn Parrott is feeling sad, I've been sending her wine gums.
Oh.
Because that's her like favorite thing. And for as stupidly expensive as shipping has gotten, I've learned that a bag of wine gums, even though it costs like only a pound, it's only if I put it in an envelope, it only costs like £5 to send. If I put it in a box, it's like £15. So
yeah, I think when we went to mail your package with your Cake Show T-shirt this time, I was like, to chip, mail it, put it in an envelope.
Yeah.
Don't put it in a box.
It's ridiculously different. I had a lot of people saying, going to Austin, do you want me to get you some Kraft mac and cheese? And I was saying no to all of them because it's just so stupidly expensive to send things. I mean, someone, a non-cake friend who had just been in the U.S., just bought me some anyway and came back to England and sent them. So that's not too expensive in England. And that's why I posted the pictures of these giant value packs. I'm going to, here. This, we call this, in radio, we call this actuality when you have the sound. that's the sound of the value size Kraft mac and cheese. This thing's huge. This is
I had no idea that even existed.
Neither did I. And it's 14.5 ounces, 411 grams. It is a giant box of what I would colloquially call Kraft dinner, being Canadian. But Jackie and a bunch of other people are like, well, we're going over there. Do you want us to buy you stuff? And I can't. The thing is, there is a place for me to get it. I still have some of the envelopes you sent of the cheese batter. I have that's right here too. I have 3 envelopes left because I've been doing them half at a time. There's an American grocery store. It's actually a gas station. Sorry, a petrol station. It's a petrol station, sort of out in the boonies, just past here. I think it used to serve the American base.
Probably.
Because there's a commissary on the base, right, obviously. But
of course, yeah.
But this, I think it was servicing, so that end of town would have been where more of the Americans who would have been at the base lived back when there were more of them. And so I think they may have started doing that, 50 years ago. And so now it's like it is a gas station auto repair shop, but in the front, where a lot of places have their little, grocery section, they have an aisle of just American stuff, and including Kraft mac and cheese. So it's only a half hour drive, and I say that only a half an hour because American listeners are like, yeah, only a half hour. British listeners are like, half an hour drive. That's half the country. So I can at any point go. So that's part of why, I appreciate when people send me stuff, and it's really sweet. And people have seemed to glom onto this idea that we should all send Kim mac and cheese, which is like really nice, but also makes me feel terrible because that seems like a lot of effort. And I don't know why people feel like they need to give me things because they don't need to. But I do appreciate it. But yes, I can just drive over and get that. I mean, I think it costs £2 or £3 a box, which is stupid. But
right.
I can has mac and cheese. Now, if they stop selling it, then I'm going to be sucking up. In fact, okay, you were talking about Rudy's. Is that the place that does the cream corn everyone's on about?
Yes.
Because I've never had it there. And there's no cream corn to be had. There's nowhere in this country. For a long time, I could just buy Green Giant or Libby's brand cream corn. There's no, for a year and a half now, no cream corn of any kind. I don't know why.
There's a lot of sort of knockoff recipes online that are apparently quite good. So
yeah.
It's not a difficult thing to make.
I know, I need
yourself,
to make it myself.
But they do it so well.
Yeah, no. So I that's what I like. I almost feel like the next time someone goes to the States, assuming, again, my husband would have been there this week, and except we don't want to die of coronavirus, I almost feel like, except that it's really hard to bring cans back in.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing to bring a box of Kraft mac and cheese, TSA doesn't really care about that. You start bringing cans, you're definitely getting inspected, and they might take it away. But just Green Giant cream corn would be awesome. But also, I don't want anyone, please, nobody ship me that. That's going to cost a fortune.
Oh gosh, yeah.
To ship because it's too heavy. But yeah, it's, why is there no cream corn in England?
That's a good question, because God knows there's corn in every other damn thing.
I know, but this is getting winding, Kyla. There's corn on pizza here. But like, no, like it is weird.
I was eating corn the other day. My friend was like, wait, I thought you didn't like corn. I said, no, I love corn. I don't like corn in things. And England did that to me.
Yeah. Because
you just never know what they're going to stick corn in on you.
It's because they don't know what to do. It's like a new world crop, but they don't know what to do with it. But
holy cow. I've never seen corn put in so many wildly inappropriate things. Cough, pizza, cough.
Yeah.
Pizza should not have corn on it. Sorry. Never.
Like, so what I wanted for, I mean, like, obviously potatoes. It's nice to eat, yeah, right? It's a nice thing to obviously just eat, but I found some recipes for things like slow cooker chicken corn chowder, right? So that makes sense in a recipe. That's where you would put corn in a chicken corn chowder. And so, like, I found this recipe for super easy chicken corn chowder. It's basically a can of corn and a can of cream corn and some chicken. And chicken broth, and you put it in your slow cooker for 8 hours or whatever. And I'm like, oh, that sounds really good, doesn't it? But there's no cream corn. Okay, so yes, I could make my own cream corn, but now that's effort. And if it's effort, then it's not an easy slow cooker meal. So then I'm going to make something else. So, yeah, I should check the American place to see if they have cream corn, but I got to go down there in person. And, well, now we don't know if we're allowed to leave the house.
Well, I suppose we should get off this phone soon, since Chip is like, are you going to get off this phone soon and have some dinner?
No, she's mine, Chip. I've taken her away yet again. But no, I'm glad you had a good show.
We had a really good show this year. Of course, there's always going to be little things here and there that go wrong. No show is ever perfect, but it went pretty darn well, I would say. And I think we had some really good advertising leading up to the show. Our art this year was wonderful. We hired an artist who actually does all of Sandy Beltran's art. And I finally said to Sandy one day, who is your artist? Because I just love her stuff. And can I afford her? And she said, it's Elizabeth Cox of Juke Fox Graphics. And yes, you can afford her. She's brilliant. And she is brilliant. She's super kind. She's just so nice, and she's fast, and she's reasonable in her pricing. So our art this year was just so cohesive. Mm-hmm. And anytime that I needed her, I told her one day, I'm like, you have made my life just so much easier this year, because if I need a graphic and I don't have time to do it, I know that you're there and you will pick it up and you will have it to me quickly. And she's like, oh, that's all I ever really want, is just to make people's life easier. I'm like, well, you've made my life so much easier, I can't even begin to tell you. So big shout out to Elizabeth Cox of Juke Fox Graphics. She's just brilliant. And her pricing is fantastic. Just so, super reasonable. So now she's helping me with Isis stuff as well. So we've got the Isis show coming up in July. So we've got San Diego, then SoFlo, and then I've got the Isis convention up in Reno this year. So,
right.
You know, my and Irene's basis for going to most shows is there a casino nearby? Yeah, no, though.
Wait, the treasurer likes casinos.
We trade off winning, though, because, you know, neither one of us ever wins every time. It's either one or the other of us that wins.
Well, you know, I retired ahead, right, from having lived in Las Vegas, that being stuck in the Las Vegas airport a couple of times waiting to fly to Australia or whatever, I would pay the nickels, and I played 4 nickels and 1 1/4, so I retired ahead.
big winner.
But the thing is, once I got to that point where I was ahead, I then felt the compulsion that I could never put anything else in, because then I would not be able to say that I was ahead anymore.
Right.
But because
that's
really,
one way to think of it.
I'm a terrible gambler, because I'm far too tightwaddy to ever actually gamble. And Korn can't gamble because he's a mathematician and he can calculate odds. So neither of us would ever, you know, like when you drive around Las Vegas and the casinos brag about, you know, 98% return, we would say 2% loss, 2% loss, because we're pessimists and frugals. So I just like the things that go spin, 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 pretty, pretty, pretty. And I'd be bored at the airport because I didn't have kids at the time.
Right.
So that's why I lived in Las Vegas and retired ahead. By
I'll
5 cents.
Next year. Next week.
Next week,
going
that's why we're doing this now.
To visit my parents, because we're going to see my mom's boy band, as I like to call them.
Oh.
She's like huge fans of this band called, or group called Il Volo. They're
Italian. Are they going to be allowed to be there?
Yeah, these young Italian good-looking guys, and that's a good question. That's a really good question. But we've already bought our tickets at this point. I said to Chip, what's the worst that happened? We're stuck at the folks for a week.
Yeah,
that's fine. Yeah. So it's not like we have a hotel or anything. We're staying at the parents. But, I tease and call them my mom's boy band. We took her to see them in Italy years ago, and she's in the audience with all of the other little Italian ladies of all ages, mind you. And she'd be like, which one's your favorite? She's so cute. Of course, this year, like every year, my mother steals the show, and everybody's like, I just love your mother.
I love your mother.
Everybody has met my mother. Yeah. Everybody.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to get off this phone and go get some dinner and let you get to bed.
Yep. And we will talk again soon, assuming we're not dead.
Sounds good.
All right.
Coronavirus out.
Great. Yes.
Talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And next up, I have Hemu Basu talking about her amazing Austin entry. Again, trigger and content warning for strong language and discussion of violence against women.
So I'm Hemu Basu. I'm a sculpted cake artist. And I started working on cakes in 2013 in Scotland. My first cake was for my son, like how it is, all the mostly bakers started, right?
Yep.
So then I found my passion in it, and I loved it. Like the first fire truck cake, it came out so awesome. And I was like, oh my God, this is something cool. And everyone at the party asked me, like, okay, where did you order this cake from? And I was like, I made it. And they're like, oh, really? So that's how everything started. And then we moved to US in 2015. And then in 2016, I started competing in competitions and stuff. And it's been a good 7 years. So, and I'm loving it.
So was this your first Austin show?
Yeah, no. So my first show was the Pretty Witty Cake competition, the UK one.
Right.
So it was online. And then second show was in San Antonio.
Right.
And then St. Louis. Then again, San Antonio. And some online competitions like that. Yeah.
Okay, but this is the first time you went to Austin, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, because I was thinking, we have not met, so.
I've been to Austin, but I've never competed there. Okay. Every time something happens at the very end moment, I'm like, oh my God, I can't. Last year also, I couldn't finish my piece, and then I didn't bring it over, and I was like, oh, I should have done that. But yeah, but this time was my first time competing in the Austin show.
Okay.
I'm going in the show from 2017, then 18, and then 19, yeah.
Right, okay. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about what you made, because I have to tell you, like, so many people were sending me your entry because they were like, Kim, you have to see what this thing is, and the description of it is so cool. So tell everyone. I will link to photos in the show notes, but describe what you made, because it's just awesome.
Okay, so my piece title is Durga the Shakti, and Durga is the goddess from Hindu mythology, and the Shakti means is the power. So Durga is the most powerful goddess in Hindu mythology, and basically her mythology centers around combating evil and demonic forces that threaten peace, and then like all kind of, you know, bad things happening. And basically the dharma, power of good over the evil. So, and Durga is basically known as the mother, like mother goddess, who's mm-hmm. very protective for their kind and for their kids. So she's very loving and always forgiving, and never forgiving, who unleashes her divine word against the wicked for liberation or of oppressed. So the thing is happening in India right now, every second, every minute, there's a case of abuse and a victim.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going on from ages and ages and ages. And I think, like, people in India worship goddess. I've seen, like, no goddess in any other religion, you know? Everywhere is, like, God, Allah, Jesus Christ, and, you know, Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
But Hindu is the culture where they pray the goddess too, and she's a mother. And then they behave like the men behave in the society, dominating and then doing bad with the girls, with the ladies, you know.
Right.
So I believe that, like, since the time began, mothers, sisters and daughters have been violated, scorned and murdered to prove dominance over the women in Indian society. And our mythology says that whenever evil becomes powerful, Durga will descend down to save the innocent. But the thing is that the heroine of my cake, the lady, she's not Durga, but her name is Shakti. And she had enough already. She's been watching the society and everyone here, like, oh my God, like, it's not stopping. Nobody cares about the women. Like, everyone is dominating them, abusing them, rape victims, like, even small kids, 5-month-old, like, daughters have been killed with this heinous crime. So she had enough, and she was like, she's tired of waiting for the miracle to happen. Like, it's a myth, like, you know, mm-hmm. Elvis says, like, God will come, goddess will come, but nobody sees it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Angels will come. Angels will come in the form of human or someone, but still, like, the main Shakti, the main power is not coming down to earth to save the innocent. So she's like, okay. She herself chooses to take action, bestowed with the mythical powers of Goddess Durga from Indian mythology. So she's trying to cut the roots of an evil and to rise above it, overpower it. So, yeah. So mm-hmm. that's the basically thing of my thing. So the monster there shows the evil of the society, the men, who is keeping everyone in his, like, you know, the ladies are trapped in the roots. The roots are the society.
Yeah.
So they are not able to come out, and they're just, what it says, sorry, my English is terrible.
No, you're doing amazingly. So,
So she's trying to attempt to save the innocent and honor the lives lost from the most evil of creatures, the men.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's
basically,
it's very powerful. I mean,
yeah, it is. And you can't believe the number of messages I've got from the people, like, oh my God, this is me. This is what's happening with me. I'm trapped in this relationship and I cannot come out. I was like, oh, sorry to hear that. But yeah, that's the thing. So many people are messaging about that piece. Like, they loved it. And they can feel it. Like, and they can feel the story behind it. Like, what's going on with the piece and what's going on with the women in the society.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I think the thing is not only concerned with India. India I have taken because of the mythology. But ladies everywhere, like, everywhere in the world. You go to any culture, they are being dominated from ages. Like, yeah. So that's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's, I mean, the look on her face, it's,
yeah.
She's like, she's going to town. Like, it's,
yeah.
The expression is, it's so serious. And I was making a joke with Jessie Lesser when she was on the first episode of this year, that the word for the podcast this year is badass. This piece is badass. This, I mean, her, the look on her face, she is, sick of it and not going to take it anymore. And her wide eyes, like it just embodies so much. She knows she doesn't look like she wants to be violent. She looks like she's forced to it.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing. I mean, like I said, I haven't had a chance to look at any other pieces. So I don't even know what placed or what, but you did take the FIP. I never remember the acronym.
FIPG.
That's the,
It was a qualifying round for the World Cake Championships.
Right.
So I played second. So if I'll go to another cake show, maybe SoFlo, and then I place first there, so I'll be direct into the finale for championships. And then whoever will come first, they will represent USA in Milan next year. So... yeah.
So that's cool. Because, I don't know what placed above this, but this piece just, I love it. I love the way, his chest is bursting with, the thorns and the hate, because he's, got hate. I don't know. I'm just interpreting this my way, but, hate in his heart. And
I wanted to make him more devilish, most devilish thing in this world, because, that's how those people are who abuse women. Like, their face is different and they show it different to the world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
the women the trapped.
That, my sister is a victim of abuse. She got, she was only 19 when she got married. And their in-laws, they were terrible. Like, they used to beat her every day for the dowry. Like, in India, dowry is the main thing, right? You know, you have to pay for that money in the wedding and all that stuff. So she, for the 2 years, she was in that abusive relationship. And both mother and son will do whatever you can think of. Like, they even tried to burn her. And then they just gave her poison. So it was hard for our family. And then I was very young that time. I've seen enough, with her. It was a lot. So when they asked, for the show, the theme was mythology. Instantly, this piece came into my mind. I was like, okay, Durga, and Durga represents, the Shakti. And I don't know where all these ideas came from, but yeah. So this piece was mainly because of her too. So,
I mean, it's so sad and awful, but it's so amazing that you put this out there, because, it is getting people talking and it is important.
It is important. Yeah. Lots of people texted me. I can send you a screenshot. Like, they were going crazy. They were like, this is my story. I'm this. I feel trapped, And I cannot tell people about it.
That's how it gets you. Anywhere in the world. I was an abused kid. I married really well because I got myself out of that situation. But I know what I watched my father break my mother's glasses on her face. And too many of us women have these stories, either from ourselves or someone that we know. I have two daughters now, and I keep making this, glib joke that, if we fix sexism, then I can have a lot more video game time, but we haven't fixed sexism. I have to worry now. My 14-year-old goes and gets nonsense from boys at school, and I'm like, why is this still so bad? But so obviously we need her to come down and chop some heads for us.
Mm-hmm. My friend, you just mentioned your daughter, right? So my friend, her daughter is 10 years old. And the boys, she comes home in the school bus, and then the boys sitting at the back of the seat, they just slip the slip on her in her bag, and it says, "Suck my private parts." Are you kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Fifth graders, boys. From where these guys get the guts to say such things to girls? I don't know. Who teaches them to be like this? Is the family, it's the society, the things they see on TV, what we are doing, why we are raising monsters? Seriously. And I was shocked. I was like, fifth grader, two boys, really?
That's where I thought, starting with my daughter, was fifth and sixth grade, there was this sudden change where, boys she'd been friends with, because she's very nerdy and mm-hmm. likes a lot of things that would be categorized as quote-unquote boy things, you know, comics and science fiction and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so she had these friends who were boys, and all of a sudden she was coming home and saying that the yeah. language they were using, the misogynistic... You know, I will stick a warning on the beginning of this episode so I can say the words, but they were using words like whore and bitch.
Wow.
And I mean, they thought it was funny. And if they didn't pick, you know, some of them, I think their parents would be horrified.
Yeah.
But someone picked it up from yeah. somewhere, and then it spreads around, and then it's cool for them all yeah. to use. And the girls yeah. are just sitting there, and they have to take it. Because everyone says boys will be boys. Boys will be, oh, yeah. that's just boys. Or the school says, hey, stop it. Yeah. And then, well, then we wonder why they get into high school and they're still doing it. And we wonder why they, you know, become, you know, coworkers who sexually harass, because no one's ever really told them. I mean, again, maybe they've had a parent say, hey, you know what, don't do that. But if there isn't someone constantly saying, no, really, don't do yeah. that. They seem yeah. to just absorb it and spew yeah. it. And we are the ones who have to deal with it.
Yeah. That's what I'm telling. Like, you know, what are we raising? Are we raising monsters? Like, from where do they learn all these things? It's the too much social media, too much, like exposure to them in the early age. I don't know what's the solution. And then girls have to deal with it.
Yeah.
So I think it's time to come. Better teach your son instead of your girls, like how to behave with the women, like how to respect the girl. It's time now. Otherwise, we will be living. The days are not soon. Like the days are not far where we'll be living in the world full of monsters. Like not a single will be a human, but monster trying to rape everyone, trying to abuse everyone. So. I think that's the world we are going for, yeah.
Well, but I think that's why pieces like this are important, and that's why, you know, obviously this podcast is about sugar arts. It's not usually about activist issues, but by raising this, I hope someone goes out and thinks about it. I hope there are, you know, parents of sons who hear this and go, hey, yeah. you know what? Maybe I should make sure my son's not doing that. And parents of daughters who go,
yeah.
you know what?
Yeah.
Maybe I should be warning her, you know, to that she doesn't. Okay, because we're all warning our daughters don't walk in the park when it's dark.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
maybe yeah. more of us, because like I say to my daughter, I shouldn't have to tell you this, but, you know, and if we start reframing it and putting it back on to where the problem is. And again, I'm not saying girls are all innocent. Because, you know, there's mean girls, there's other stuff. But the last time I checked, the majority of domestic violence, sexual assault, sexual harassment was perpetrated by cishet men on women.
Yeah.
That's...
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
That is always on the higher side. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we if we all start complaining about it, I mean, this Me Too movement, I think, has... helped a bit. I think it's made it more okay
everyone
to say.
Everyone came out.
And so, you know what? This is our community can do this too. This is, I mean, at the Austin show, we have a code of conduct. We didn't put it in because we were getting a lot of sexual harassment complaints. We put it in more for other issues. But that was part of, because I wrote it and I was lifting language from other things. And it says in there that if you sexually harass someone at the Austin show, that is in violation of the code of conduct. Not only will it be dealt with like it should be dealt with anyway, but you're never coming back.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
So, and we need...
That's how it should be everywhere. You know? Yeah. That's how it should be. Like, in the multinational companies, there are people who are violating women's, like, you know, like, big bosses of the companies, like, they do it often. So, it's like... That's how it should be everywhere in every field. Like, okay, if we hear anything about it, we are not going to leave you or anything, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's an awesome piece, and I kind of adore you for making it. Like, and I just so much look forward to whatever you're going to make next, and because you've definitely got our attention. This is so cool.
Thank you so much.
So, and I assume you had a good show at the Austin show. Aside from that,
it's always fun. Like, you always get to meet your cake family, and you know, make friends, and then we hang out in the evening for dinner and stuff. It's always fun.
Yep.
So, yeah. And I always look forward to going in the cake shows. So next is SoFlo. So, right. Yeah, I'm excited to see how many friends will come there and then we'll hang out.
Yeah. Yes. Well, if you ever come back this way, I go to CI every year now that I'm living here.
Yeah, sure.
So it would be great to meet up with you. So do you know what you're making for SoFlo yet, or are you still in recovery from this one?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've got something in mind. The theme is like vintage Florida.
Mm.
So let's see. I cannot tell you right now.
No, I know you can't say what it is. Yeah. I'm just curious to know if you were like... Just like, because sometimes at the end of my piece, I have 10 other ideas, and sometimes at the end of a piece, I'm like,
I know, right? It always happens. For this piece also, I had something else in mind, like I'll do this, and I wanted to make the backdrop also with all the, like, different faces and all that stuff, more news about all, like, what's going on in the world. But I didn't get the time.
Yeah.
It's always time, you know, the kids and everything.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, but I put a lot of efforts in this piece, and I really am happy that how it came out and how it impressed everyone, and it's the story of my family, so yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on and talking about it. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And I hope to talk to you again soon, and if you ever want to do a full episode, let me know, and you come on and talk about all your other cakes, too.
Yeah, we can do that. Sure.
All right, well.
Good night.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Yeah, bye.
Bye.
This has been the Eat the Evidence podcast. A warm thanks to all of my contributors, and you can find out more about them and the things discussed on today's episode in the show notes by visiting the podcast section of the Eat the Evidence website, eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. There, you'll find social media links, as well as links to iTunes, Stitcher, and other places where you can subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. I've also posted detailed instructions on how to leave me a Facebook voicemail message and other options to call into the show. Please do feel free at any time to call in your very own cake formation, funny story, talk about a challenge you're having or have recently overcome, or rant about something driving you crazy. And if you like the show, please post a review on iTunes and share it with all of your sugar artist friends. This show was produced and edited by me, Kimberly Chapman. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are an amazing artist, and everyone involved with this podcast supports you. You can do it! Until next time, bye-bye, and good luck with whatever you're working on.
We love you, Irene.
We love you, Irene.